fellow at the Nation Institute. Check out his piece, Repression Deepens in Egypt. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. But first, I want to let you know we have an immediate opening for an on-air graphics designer and CG operator. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Nefel Saramate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, and Al-Kafani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. We'll have progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective.
Hey, KBOO supporters, we just sent you a card, so watch your mailbox. It's an opportunity to give a little more assistance at this time of year to your listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered community radio station. Yep, tax time. That means that your donation makes a difference, and it'll really make a difference for KBOO because you can help us qualify for Oregon Cultural Trust matching funds. You can get more information about this on our website at kboo.fm/year-end-gift-2013.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rank in Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This is Justin Miller. Join me on Friday, December 20th at 11 a.m. when my guest will be renowned author Salman Rushdie, speaking about his latest work, Joseph Anton, a memoir, an intimate look at his life in hiding after the publication of the Satanic Verses. Salman Rushdie talks about how he viewed the threats of radical fundamentalism against artists and art, his classic American immigration experience, and how WikiLeaks, Manning, and Snowden fit into the global struggle for free speech. That's Salman Rushdie this Friday at 11 a.m., online at kboo.fm, and on your community radio station, KBOO.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. We are down to almost the last few days of this year. I have a couple of things I want to talk about today, but I'd love to hear from you about, how you're feeling about the end of the year, what you're hoping for 2014. I was about to say privilege, but that would be overstating it. I went to the Portland City Council yesterday because there were big issues on their agenda that I wanted to weigh in on. One was the City Council was considering the Portland Police Association's new contract, their agreement with the Department of Justice, and moving forward the implementation of the settlement agreement, and changes to the IPR, also known as the Independent Police Review, which isn't independent, which really doesn't review police, and which is really a self-defeating accountability system. I love that title because that's the title the Department of Justice gave to what we call our police oversight system here in the city of Portland. So I'll start with the Independent Police Review first, which was on the City Council agenda yesterday at 2 o'clock. You may remember that about a month ago, the Independent Police Review Director brought a proposal to the Portland City Council to make changes. And what's interesting is everybody said, we're making these changes because the Department of Justice says we have to. Well, he came with some changes, nowhere near the fundamental changes that have to happen if we're truly going to investigate police and make sure that the community has an avenue to actually put in a complaint and have confidence that the complaint will be investigated thoroughly and that a conclusion will come out of it. The way our current system works, I wish you could see the picture that the Department of Justice created for how the public has to figure out how to work through our accountability system, because it's a maze of a mess. The changes proposed both by the Department of Justice and the Independent Police Review, the IPR office, don't go far enough to ensure that the public really will have an investigation. I think the thing most of the public doesn't understand is most police investigations are done by Portland police officers. The Internal Affairs Division is the department within Portland Police Bureau that is tasked with investigating police. I continue to say we should all go back to the investigation that was done by the Department of Justice a year. I guess they concluded it almost a year ago now. And because the investigation clearly shows you, gave us a window into what's really broken within Portland Police Bureau. And so one of the things that the IPR director was proposing, of course, the Department of Justice first is going to expand the CRC, which is the Citizen Review Committee of the IPR. So if you are a community member who has filed a complaint, you file the complaint with the IPR office. The IPR then make some determination about whether or not there's any validity to your claim. And data shows that they ignore 60% of the complaints that come in. They either don't believe that they have enough people to investigate it. And what I mean by that is that it's a he said, she said kind of thing. Somebody says, the police treated me disrespectfully. It's only that person in the police. And so that is not a complaint that the IPR would actually send through the system to be investigated, which unfortunately is a lot of the complaints that come in. And so if you're a community member, unless you have a camera on your hat, that you can record the interaction, or you have your cell phone that is recording the interaction, you really don't have a venue to actually hold that police officer accountable for inappropriate behavior. And so, and the IPR changes that were being proposed are tiny changes as compared to the changes that have been collected over the last 12 years that we've had this incompetent system in place. And I'll give an example. Every time we have reports, whether it's the OIR group, which investigates deaths in custody by Portland Police, which is an independent agency City of Portland contracts with, every report that they have, they come back and say, we have to do a better job of record keeping. We have to do a better job of actually completing after action reports. We have to do a better job of actually making sure that we have the data necessary to process a complaint. And so as a member of the public who's been following this, 2 years of my life have been involved with this Department of Justice investigation. Today, we go back to the judge. Judge Michael Simon at the federal courthouse is going to, this afternoon at 1:30, announce the process for the community fairness hearing, which will be the first opportunity that the public has to weigh in. And it's interesting because the more I learn about this process, the more concerned I become, because it appears that the judge will either have to say the whole deal is a good deal or the whole deal is a bad deal. And it doesn't appear And he'll tell us today whether my assumption is correct. It doesn't appear that he can go in and say, you need to remove this section. You need to go back and renegotiate this section of the agreement. You need to take this out because this has absolutely nothing to do with the agreement. But it doesn't appear that he's going to have the ability to do that. If he doesn't, if he has to just accept this in one lump sum, I think that's going to be a challenge. And I think the public that's been totally left out of this process, when they come to the fairness hearing, will make that case to the judge. At least I hope they will. And so this afternoon we'll know the date of the fairness hearing. We keep saying it's going to be in February because that's what we're going to ask the judge today. And hopefully he will go along with that. But we will see. The fairness hearing will happen at the courthouse, at the federal courthouse. It will happen during the workday, sometime Monday through Friday, sometime between 9 and 5, which means a lot of people who have good information may be shut out of the process because they won't be able to get off work or school. They'll have child care issues. And so the goal will be to give people an opportunity to either videotape their testimony, provide written testimony, email testimony. We're going to use every communication tool available to make sure that people have access to the federal judge so he hears from as many community members as possible. But there'll be more information coming, and certainly probably mid-January, I'll be able to give you a slate of what's going to be taking place around that. Back to the Portland Police Association contract, it was really disappointing to see that after 6 months of negotiation, three critical issues still were not addressed in Portland Police Association's contract. The one most controversial one is the 48-hour rule, which is in the contract and says that Portland police officers, after participating in a use of force event, have up to 48 hours before they can be questioned. And so Portland police have interpreted that to mean that anytime somebody wants to question them, they have 48 hours before they have to make a statement. And that has been not only the interpretation, but the practice over the last decade, at least. I don't know how long this little segment has been in Portland Police Bureau's contract, but I can tell you the last three contracts we, the community, have been trying to get that 48-hour rule taken out. Think about this. If you get arrested, can you see yourself saying to the officer, well, I'm sorry, I have 48 hours. I need to go talk to my union rep. I need to figure out whether or not I should bring an attorney in. And I have 48 hours before I can talk to you. Come back in 2 days and I'll let you know whether or not I want to have a conversation with you. I hope people start doing that, quite frankly, because I think if it's good enough for police that they have 48 hours because they're so traumatized after the event, certainly the public could make the same argument, that we are also traumatized after a event like this, and therefore we refuse to talk to police for 48 hours. And in fact, I think that might be a great community campaign to start next year, right? You don't talk, we don't talk. You got 48 hours, we got 48 hours. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So the 48-hour rule was number one. The second one is the issue of performance evaluations. I have to tell you, this particular one is driving me crazy because supposedly we had instituted performance evaluations for Portland police officers after the last contract was signed. That was a 5-year contract. In fact, even with conversations with the Department of Justice, Chief Reese was telling the Department of Justice, we do evaluations once a quarter, we do 4 a year, we pick the best one to put into the police officer's personnel file, and all that appears to have been smoke and mirrors, because guess what? All of a sudden now, we're going to have real performance evaluations that, but even the performance evaluations don't go far enough. If you or I are being evaluated by our employer, the evaluation is an opportunity to talk about deficiencies in your performance and what you need to do to get your performance up to satisfactory level. But not if you're a Portland police officer. If you're a Portland police officer, it appears that your evaluation is advisory and will have no impact on your assignment, your salary, your anything having to do with your police career. And so I asked this question at the city council meeting. So why are you doing evaluations if they don't impact the individuals, right? So what are these evaluations going to look like is the part that is absolutely making me crazy. And so, I guess the good news is that evaluations actually are part of the contract. That's the good news. But if it took this long to convince Portland Police that they have to evaluate annually their employees, that's a huge, huge problem. And so this is something that as a community, we're going to have to continue to keep our eyes on, because it is clear that that we are told one thing, but when you look at the files and the records, what we find is something totally different. And if you don't believe me, please go back and read the Department of Justice, both settlement agreement and the investigation, because what you will find is it says in there in black and white how thorough these evaluations are that were being done. And so, again, I think I'm just going to say it. I think the chief lies to the public on a regular basis, and I think this is a perfect example of him lying to the public, telling the public what the public wants to hear, and yet not doing anything inside the police bureau to fundamentally make those changes happen. And I think that's what was happening with the settlement agreement, and quite frankly, I think he talks a good game, but I don't believe what he says, because the practices show that what he says cannot be trusted. And that's just one person's opinion. I'm going to go to the phone line. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO. Hey. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joanne. You know, I'll always weigh in on the police.
Well, cool.
And not because I've ever had a real problem with them, but, the thing is that lit me up this morning when you said, you know, I mean, it just was almost a revelation in a way to me that the police are investigating themselves.
Oh, no question.
And that's probably historically, if you go to other countries who are repressing people and you go to our country, and our worst times, and if you look at, I'm sorry to keep going, but if you look at the Republican, the right-wing party of our country, they want these like big companies who pollute and everything. They don't want the Environmental Protection Agency. They want these companies to inspect themselves.
That's
self-regulation.
Right. That's right. That's absolutely right.
It's never worked. It doesn't work. And but the sad thing about this dog and pony and clown show, because these people are basically acting like something out of Hogan's Heroes, or McHale's Navy. seriously. But, I mean, there are actually literally people dying.
Yes.
And I mean, people have died. And also, people have been maimed and hurt. And you can use the old terminology. It's not going to matter until it happens to you.
Right.
But, I mean, the bottom line is as this dog and pony show or clown show progresses, there's going to be more stuff spreading out over the community, and if you don't think your potential of being a victim is high, look at it a little closer. It's gonna start seeping into the entire community.
Well, and I think I think you're absolutely right. And I think the challenge is, since most people don't have interaction with police in their day-to-day life, right? Most people believe that they're out there protecting and serving the community. And I have to say, one of the things that I find really interesting is that in this community, and I'm not sure this happens everywhere else, but in this community, a press release from the Portland Police Public Information Office is printed and reported on as if it's news, and as if it actually, as if a reporter had gone out and talked to people. And so one of the things in our new Jim Crow group that we tell people is when you're reading articles about gang violence and what's going on in various communities, read the article to see if anybody actually was talked to. Are there quotes from anybody? Because what normally happens is all day long, every day, Monday through Friday, the Public Information Office of Portland Police is sending press releases out. And because the media has become so weak in this nation, and because they have laid off senior staff, they don't appear to have any kind of investigative reporters anymore. They just take it off their fax machine, and maybe they email it nowadays, but they just take the press release and stick it in the paper or read it as if it's a news story. So we as the public have to challenge that, right? It's like when we see this stuff, because I live in East Portland, and when I hear Portland Police talk about my neighborhood, they are not talking about the neighborhood I live in. They're talking about some old Wild West kind of crazed community. That's not the neighborhood I live in. And so, but because they get the frame, what my community looks like, that's the public perception of East Portland.
And that, and one more thing I'd like to point out, I agree with everything you said. The way the police are looking at you and your community, as well as my community, I live in Southwest, but the way they describe my community is from a war zone perspective. They don't see it as a community
that needs
a few things. They look at it as a war zone.
Yes.
And I think that people in Portland need to look at what just happened to that Indian consul, as far away as it is, who was strip searched and all that.
Oh, right, right.
I'm just going to get up on my soapbox for a second. This is the culture that is being permeated nationwide of our police.
Yes.
And you know what? If you think that, it sounds all these cliches. If you really think that it can't happen in Portland, ask the Chassis family,
right?
All these families. It already is happening.
Aaron Campbell, right?
Campbell is gonna. It's coming to Portland. If we do not stop it,
right.
It is going. There are going to be people in offices. It's going to happen to them. And just the culture of policing in the United States is almost, it goes all the way across. So, it's coming to us.
And what's interesting is we are now at the ninth month where Portland Police has not shot anybody.
Right.
The question is, can we make it a year?
Well, it should be. I mean, that shouldn't even be on our conscience. We shouldn't be just sitting there in fear, waiting for the police to shoot somebody, and we shouldn't be congratulating them because they went 9 months without shooting somebody.
Well, that's exactly right. But I certainly wasn't congratulating them because I don't think it's their job to shoot people. But I was pointing it out because we've had some really deadly years. I think 2010 was probably our most deadly year of police killing community members. I brought that up because it is the aggressive ratcheting up of aggressive behavior that happens when police officers show up and they have an assumption about either the community that they're operating in, the people that they're interacting with. And so they come in with a preset mindset about who they're going to engage when they get to that neighborhood. And so if you come into East Portland and all your media tells you that this is a gang-infested territory, then everybody you meet is a gang member until they prove otherwise.
Yeah, just don't wear your hoodies, I guess, or, or wear your hoodies. You know, if everybody wears hoodies, maybe it'll stop bothering people. But yeah, I really think. And one more thing before I go,
all right.
I really think it's sad. I mean, we have to look at this. I really get kind of angry about this, and I get sad that we have to spend all this energy just so the police will do their job in a correct and civilized manner. I mean, we have, you know, I mean, look, how many meetings do you have to go to just so the police will be act like police, you
right.
know, not shoot anybody for 9 months, you know?
Well, right.
I mean, it's sad that we just have to consume ourselves, because if we drop our vigilance for a few weeks, they'll be back out there with their weapons.
You know, and this is the challenge, quite frankly. I mean, I don't know anyone who can go to every city council meeting that has an impact on the police or the independent, the so-called independent police review process. Because, give an example, yesterday, let's see, the first meeting was from 10 to 1, and then the second meeting was from 2 to 4:30, right? That's 5.5 hours of being unpaid, sitting at the city council, waiting for your 3 minutes so that you can tell them information that you know they're not going to use and they're not going to incorporate it into their decision making, right? And so after a certain point, I mean, I walked out of city council yesterday and I was like, I'm just pretty fed up with this place, right? Because it's like, why bother? Why would the public bother? And I can say I bother because I want to make sure that somebody's in there speaking truth to power before they just go ahead and do what they're going to do anyway.
And you know what? If my boss had to monitor me and my little $13 an hour job
uh-huh.
any longer than like 10 or 20 minutes,
right?
Okay, I'd be fired. You know, and I'll tell you what. You know, I would just be out on the street, because it would be like, look, it's not worth it. So, like, what are we paying these cops? Like 50, 80, 60,000?
Yeah,
a
we're
year?
Paying them well.
Well,
and we just actually increase most of their pay.
Yeah, so and then we have to hold their hand. You know, I don't get it, but I've taken up a lot of time, and I apologize.
Well, no, I appreciate it, because, you know, I was talking to myself, so it's always good to have someone else call in. And I thank you very much. I appreciate your insight and the fact that you're paying attention, because that's what's going to fix it. We need many, 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 many more people paying attention to what happens at City Hall. And I certainly understand that, you know, it's overwhelming, right? Trying to keep up with this stuff. And I realized, I was sitting in the city council yesterday thinking, it costs a lot of money to be an individual trying to make change at City Hall. Think about how much money you spend in parking, you know, the amount of time it takes to get there, the fact that all the certified smart people speak first because we don't want them hanging around. But then for the public, right? It's okay to have us sitting around for 3 to 4 hours to get 3 minutes to say something that they're not going to even consider in their vote.
Well, I think the old Southern term for this is I think these boys would be lying when the truth would do them better. Anyway, you have a great day.
You too, and have
happy
a great
holiday.
Yeah, same to you. Have
Bye-bye.
A great holiday season. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So when I talked about the PPA contract, I got a little stuck on the 48-hour rule. So we talked about that. The IPR, the way the IPR is currently set up, and as I said, since they don't do investigations, they send it to the Portland Police Bureau's Internal Affairs Division for the investigation. Then if a community member then appeals and says they don't like the fact that the police investigated the police and found the police did nothing wrong, then a community member has the ability to appeal that decision to the Citizen Review Committee, which is called the CRC. The Citizen Review Committee then reviews the report the information that was gathered during the investigation, and then they come up with a ruling. They only have two rulings they can come up with. They can request that the police reinvestigate the case, or they can just confirm the investigation that has taken place. So again, they don't have the ability to do much except review what the police have already done and ask for another investigation if they think that's appropriate. So that's the system that we have now. And the insanity of that system is the IPR director can sit in on the investigation that IAD is conducting. But if they have a question for the police officer, they have to ask the IAD personnel to ask the question of the officer. Now think, three of us are sitting in a room, right? One of us is the IAD investigator. One of us is the IPR director. The other one is the officer who's been accused of something. So if I'm sitting here facing you, I can't ask you a question direct because the police contract says that only police can interview police officers. And so why would they not change that? How ludicrous is that? And since we know how effective the police have been in investigating police, that was a change that should have taken place in this new contract. Not that the IPR, and I will say it again, it's not that the IPR is actually effective in investigating, but it's ludicrous to have them in the room and have them not be able to ask direct questions. That's a problem. And then so I talked about the performance evaluations, the 48-hour rule, and the compelling testimony. So those were the three big pieces of the contract that the city council could have made significant change to, and they chose not to. And so those issues go from the old contract into the new contract that we have to live with for another 4 years. So now it won't be till 2017. We will probably have new people on the city council, and they will be in the same quagmire about, well, we can't change the 48-hour rule. We can't compel officers to. So who will? If the city council won't do it, If the city council refuses to do it, if the IPR has no power, who's going to make that happen? It's got to be us. And I think us, the people, have to really create an independent police review. I'm still appalled that Vera Katz called it that, because it's not independent. It doesn't review police. It just simply reviews paperwork. And that's it. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Dave. Welcome to K-Book.
Thanks, Joanne. I listened to the hearing yesterday on the police contract, extension of the contract. And whose name never came up? Officer Ron Freshour.
Ah, yes.
Now, he was a police sniper that killed an unarmed man during a welfare check. And the Portland City Council finally got to the position where this was a violation of policy and Freshour had to be fired. And their decision to fire Freshour was overruled in an arbitration process.
Right.
Well, wasn't the police union contract the reason that the will of city council was not able to be carried out? I mean, nobody talked about the fact that when Freshour is sitting at home collecting full pay, not working for the Portland police, because an arbitrator ruled that the city hadn't abided by their contract.
Right.
And so I agree with the earlier caller about the city council look like bobbleheads. They just sort of listened to the testimony. They didn't take a reasoned approach to solving their own problems, and that really concerned me. You talked about the length of this contract at 4 years.
Right.
Sort of locks in current practices.
Yes.
As with minor changes and increased funding for police. So now I understand the city of Portland is about to create a community oversight advisory board as a result of being found guilty of civil rights violations amongst the people for the police's illegal use of force. So now, as they gather even more citizens to come in on their own time, uncompensated, they've just taken off the table one of the prime mechanisms by which they might reform and make the Portland police adhere to the constitutional protections that we have. That, I found, why didn't they make it a one-year contract?
Right.
They talked about that there were some difficulties in working out some parts of the 48-hour rule that would have taken time to have gone to, what was it, the...
They would have had to go to arbitration. It was the Employee Relations Board.
Employee Relations Board. They kept calling it the ERB.
Right.
And so they have time. If they just had a one-year contract, that would give them time to go to the ERB and get those issues resolved so they can put them into the contract.
But the problem is they didn't bring it up. I mean, it would be one thing. They did not bring it up. There is no indication from the city council meeting yesterday that the mayor and the city council drew a line in the sand and said, these are things that we have to have in this contract. It appears they went into the contract talks basically saying, well, what do you want? Well, what do you want? Well, what do you want? Right? It was clear to me sitting through that city council hearing yesterday that there was never even a... It's like they didn't even walk into the negotiation saying, based on the DOJ, these are things that we absolutely have to get out of this contract. So these things are off the table. As the employer, they could have said these are the non-bargaining issues that are off the table. They didn't do that.
As a political leader, Charlie Hales could have gone to the people and said, these are the things I will bargain for.
Yes.
But instead, they just disappear behind closed doors and we come up with this language. It's the same way that the actual proposed settlement agreement was negotiated. No one knows what Mayor Adams demanded and then lost, right? We never know whether the people's will was argued for when they go behind closed doors.
Exactly. Like, and then what we do know is that Sam Adams was able to stuff in his pet project and have it fully funded, and it had absolutely nothing to do with police oversight. And that's that, what is that downtown, what are they, I'm forgetting the name of the program, but it's one of those programs that that was Sam's pet project, that people that they force into treatment or housing, they have to have like certain number of convictions already. And it's I can't remember the name of it, but it made me crazy that all of a sudden now we've got to take the package full when the negotiation was all about Sam knew he was headed out the door. He didn't really much care about how this was going to be implemented, but he sure made sure his pet project was stuck in. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a few hundred thousand dollars a year that we're paying for a project that has absolutely nothing to do with holding police accountable for unconstitutional behavior.
After the vote was taken, Commissioner Novick gave a nod to you and the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. And he said, we know you'll be here. And he doesn't really understand the fatigue that's happening in the community.
Right.
Is that as the doors, it's the revolving doors continue to keep the same thing in place despite being found guilty of civil rights violations. I don't think that they can be sure that the loyal opposition will continue to play in the charade, which is actually vital, I believe. And one of the things that Novick was concerned about in this after-the-vote thing was that the CRC, the Citizen Review Commission, is that what this committee?
Citizen Review Committee, right.
Is about to be tasked with a huge job of reviewing citizen complaints within a 21-day period.
Right.
And he said that that was a problem that's in the proposed agreement.
That's right.
That it's going to create this huge workload.
Right.
And I just wanted to explain to him that he's backing an agreement that is going to transfer tens of millions of new dollars to the Portland police.
That's right.
To effect these changes.
Right.
And he sits on a committee on the council that will not give tens of millions of dollars to the Citizen Review Committee or to any part of the apparatus like an independent civilian-led oversight.
Yes.
It's interesting that we're talking about the fatigue of people, and they're calling on the citizens to come get involved in a community oversight advisory board, to be involved in the citizen review committee, and yet they won't, I mean, instead of giving them $25 million as they plan to give to the police, they'll provide perhaps free photocopying service for the loyal opposition.
Right. Well, and that is the frustration. I mean, you think about, I mean, this city council hearing wasn't like that. But I remember the last one when it was filled with police officers, and I was sitting around thinking, man, we're paying an awful lot of money to have them sit here for 3 hours and do nothing. But thank you. You raised a really good point about Steve Novak and his perception that the community activists will always be there. I think that's a very presumptuous statement to say that we would always be there, because I don't know. I mean, at some point we're going to give up believing that working with the city council and with the police chief and with the people within City Hall are going to give us the changes we want. At some point, we're going to decide that that is an avenue that isn't working. So we're going to have to come up with other tactics and other strategies to get what we want. That's what I think will happen. I think they may be surprised to find out that the people that they expect to come in just so they can look good on the record, because, you know, they love, you know, having these thoughtful conversations with us while we're testifying for all 3 minutes. Yet they don't actually fundamentally do anything with that information. So it's going to be interesting to see what does happen. And I think a lot will have to do with the direction that Judge Michael Simon gives us this afternoon at 1:30 about the next steps and what is fairness, and how is fairness an all or nothing kind of proposition. And if his goal is to decide whether this agreement is fair to the people of Portland, I think I think that the DOJ will have a hard road to go to get this settlement agreement implemented.
Well, thanks for the work that you do, Joanne.
Well, and thank you for your call, Dave. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We've been talking about yesterday's city council hearing on two big issues, on making changes and reforms to the Independent Police Review, known as the IPR, and the new 4-year contract of the Portland Police Association. The earlier caller was talking about the gangs and how the gang task force, how they operate. And it's interesting because since East Portland has been identified now as this gang territory, and because East Portland covers both Gresham and the city of Portland, it's been interesting watching how the police engage in that area. It is not uncommon to have both Portland and Gresham police pulling people over in East Portland, because you could be on one side of the street and be in Gresham, be on the other side and be in the city of Portland. So it's not unusual to see police agencies from two agencies, Gresham and the city of Portland, pulling people over and searching people. What's disappointing is that the image that they paint about East Portland and the Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Stanton, this is quote exactly from him. The corner of 162nd and Southeast Stock, at 8 o'clock the drug dealers come out, at 8:30 the prostitutes, and at 9 the gangbangers come out. And how do I know? Because I saw them. I sat up there on that corner and I watched them. Well, I will say to Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Stanton that I live in the area. I walk the area all times of the day and night, and I have never run into a prostitute. I've never run into a gangbanger. I've never run into anybody that was doing That was a gang member. I've never been into any gang activity in the area. Have I seen drug deals go down in my neighborhood? Yeah. But I also see drug deals go down outside of City Hall and other parts of the city. So it's not like my neighborhood is unique for that activity. But what's frustrating is that the only resources that the city seems willing to put into East Portland seem to be in policing. And we don't need more policing. We have more than enough police. And because we get help from Gresham, we really, really, really don't need more police. But there are things that we need, like a community center, like activities for kids for after school, like jobs. Be nice if PDC was actually giving somebody money to open a grocery store in East Portland. That would make sense, but that's not what we're doing. So we still have a lot of work to do. And at 1:30 today, when we talk to Judge Michael Simon, he will direct us into what the next steps are. But for the community, we're going to do a lot of community education forums. We're going to help people get their testimony in. We're going to help people videotape their testimony if they can't show up the day of the trial. But we are hoping that we have hundreds of people that will be willing to take the day off work and show up at the federal courthouse. I think it's going to be important for the judge to see that the people of Portland have been paying attention. And if you haven't, you've got some time to catch up. If you want to read both the Department of Justice investigation as well as the settlement agreement, I would encourage you to go to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division website, and you can put that into your search engine. They will have listed all the settlement agreements from across the country that they have been implementing over the last 5 years. And you will see Portland there. And I think it's really, really important that people go back and read the investigation. I almost bit my lip yesterday because I was biting down so hard, trying not to say anything, when the city council started talking about our broken mental health system and how the police are becoming the first responders, et cetera, et cetera. My response to that is, if it is true, we have a broken mental health system, and $26 million that we're about to spend on this settlement agreement would go a long way to actually fixing our broken mental health system. So if it's about mental health, then put the money in the mental health system. Creating a Bureau of Behavioral Health, a behavioral health unit inside Portland Police Bureau is frightening to me. Frightening, because if you've read the investigation, you know that Portland police officers are not the warm and fuzzy friendly people that show up on your doorstep. If you read the investigation, you know that when people have called the police to do welfare checks, people have died, people have ended up being tased and injured by the person that was coming out to do a welfare check. And so unless we have fundamentally changed how Portland police officers have been trained, and I don't think 30 hours of training on mental health is sufficient to be qualified to be a mental health professional at the door. And so the whole premise of this settlement agreement is somehow Portland police are going to now be warm and fuzzy at the door when they show up because the person behind the door might have a mental health issue. I don't believe that for a second. And quite frankly, Portland Police Bureau's own data shows that since the Department of Justice came to town, since the settlement agreement has been filed, the use of force by police officers has gone up. Their own data shows that the use of force has gone up. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can go to Portland Police Bureau's website. You can look under the Department of Justice. You can look at the report for use of force. And what you will find is that it has been steadily climbing up since the DOJ left town, since the DOJ did the investigation. So you have to ask yourself, if we've supposedly retrained officers in use of force, why are the use of force incidents going up? That will be a question that I hope we get answered when we spend time with Judge Michael Simon at the fairness hearing. There is a lot of information. If you want to educate yourself on this issue, there really is a lot of information on Portland Police Bureau's own website. And what I love on their website is a chart that shows that they have pretty much implemented everything that the Department of Justice wanted us to do. They have pretty much, it's pretty much done. So if you look at the chart on Portland Police Bureau's website, you will find that it's a multicolored chart. The chart shows what's been accomplished, what's still in the works. And if you flip through it, what you find is just about everything's already been done. So which means that we've already fixed all those problems that the Department of Justice found. And we can go back to doing other stuff now. My fear is the Department of Justice investigation is so narrowly focused that it's going to give both Portland police, and especially under this current chief, the ability to say they can't do anything else because all their energy is focused on implementing the Department of Justice settlement agreement. And so what about the latest racial profiling data, which Portland police had been releasing publicly annually since back in, at least over the last decade, they've been releasing this information. It hasn't changed any in the decade that they've been releasing it. But it's the data on pedestrian and traffic stops, and that data has consistently for the last decade showed if you're African American, you're twice as likely to be stopped and searched. If you're Latino, you're 1.7 times more likely to be stopped and searched. If you're white, you're less likely to be stopped. You're less likely to be searched. But if by chance you're stopped and if by chance you're searched, you're much more likely to have drugs, weapons, and other paraphernalia on you. Portland Police Bureau's data shows that. But we have not seen a report since 2012. And I want to know where that information is, because they're collecting it. And I think that they are just not releasing it because guess what? The data looks bad and it's looked bad for them for a long time. Going to go back to the phone line now. Hello, Jeremy. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. I'm really shocked at how bad Hales has been on this issue because, you know, back, turn of the century, he voted to keep, you know, the FBI out of Portland Police Department. I mean, that was kind of surprising.
That's right.
You know, seemed then and continues to seem now like, you know, the Republican that he was on most issues. But I sort of thought I think he sort of got the cops. And you know, he did something earlier this year which half impressed me around, you know, not letting the officers had their own union.
Oh, right. So, well, right. We don't know. I don't know if that's been resolved yet, but what he did.
But anyway, he seemed to be on the right side of that.
Right.
And I'm just sort of, you know, absolutely horrified that he's been, you know, I mean, well, he's totally flipped on the homeless, and which sort of seems to be, you know, loving the cops, and now he's embraced the cops. I don't know if he was posturing previously or what, but it really bothered me. With regard to Adams, I just wanted to say this, and I'm sure you know him better than I do, but I presume that the reason he gave the cops everything they wanted whenever they wanted it is that they had a fair amount of dirt on him. I mean, when he's out in that parking lot taking his pants off, drunk out of his mind, smashing his car into somebody else, and the officer doesn't even give him a sobriety test, I would argue that, you know, they then had a fair amount of dirt on him and that there isn't already an established relationship. But I hated Adams. Thought he was, you know, quite corrupt. But I don't get what's going on with Hales.
Well,
he seemed to sort of get the cops.
When he was running for office, and I think a lot of people may have forgot this, I was concerned when his opponent imploded, one of the first things that he said was, And Mike Reese is great. And I'm you know, he immediately at the beginning of his campaign, when he didn't need to, didn't have to, confirmed that he would keep Mike Reese as police chief, which to me sent a strong message about status quo activity and behavior, because Mike Reese will go down as one of the worst police chiefs we've ever had in the city of Portland. And we've had
and that's a pretty high bar.
And that's there a pretty high bar. Right, because we've had some pretty bad ones, but he will go down as one of the worst ones we've ever had. And quite frankly, one that you can't believe anything he says, because he just doesn't tell the truth. He just doesn't know how to tell the truth. But
That's a really good point about him and Reese. I half remember that, and you're absolutely right. That's very telling.
And now
he's paying off.
What's also interesting is that other police chiefs have lost their jobs for lying to their boss, but this one doesn't seem to lose his job no matter how much he lies and how often. He still just continues on. And that's a problem. So I think we need a new police chief. I think we need a more involved citizenry so that they can put pressure on the city council to make the changes that have to happen. I mean, you know, this is not rocket science. It's not rocket science. It's not, you know, if we either have a well-trained police force or we don't. It's clear we don't, because they keep making some really elementary mistakes. And so if they're not well-trained, then let's retrain them. But, of course, what we did last year was, right, we spent millions of dollars to build them their own training facility out of the public eye so they can actually reinforce this really egregious behavior among themselves. And this particular police chief doesn't think the public has any insight into community policing, so he has actually refused to create a training program that brings in community members to actually help recruits understand what the expectations are from the community for community police officers. The only time they mention community police officers is in presentations nowadays. It's not a real thing. Just like evaluations weren't real, even though Reese was telling everybody he was doing 4 a year, that wasn't real. And so I think we need a new police chief. We need leadership. We need the community to just like get really ticked off and start demanding real change. But hopefully we'll be able to do that next year.
Will there be any point in showing up downtown today if I can't get there to like 2:30 or something?
I'm assuming that the judge is going to be pretty succinct today, right? The goal today for him is really to lay out the process for the community fairness hearing. All the parties are going to come in and say, we've reached an agreement, we're ready to move forward. And then he's going to lay out what his process will be for the fairness hearing. I think by 2:30 it will probably be done.
Thanks for the warning. If I come on down, I'll try to come.
Well, thanks for your willingness. This has been Joanne Hardesty. You have a fabulous, fabulous Christmas. And I will see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. Just about 9 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. In about a half hour, you can hear Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering. His guest is Stephen Cohen today, professor emeritus at New York University and Princeton University. His books include Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives. from Stalinism to the new Cold War. They'll discuss recent events in the Ukraine. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints presents excerpts from Dreaming Wildly, Fighting to Win, a conversation with Angela Davis and Martin Espada, recorded in early November in Oakland, California. And at 11, it's a special 1 hour Between the Covers with host David Naiman. Today, he speaks with Veronica Gonzalez-Pina about The Sad Passions, her novel of a middle-class Mexican family torn apart by mental illness. But first, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know, and that's next on KBOO.
Slip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Balalaika's ringing out. Well, that's because it's time for Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is the news you're not supposed to know. I'd like to start with Norman Solomon, who put an article in Global Research. He's put articles all over the place in many publications and on the web for years, and you know what? He started off here at KBOO Portland. Well, I should say started off. I mean, he was here anyway 2 decades ago and in this slot. But Norman Solomon has written, news media should illuminate conflicts of interest, not embody them. But the owner of the Washington Post is now doing big business with the Central Intelligence Agency, while readers of the newspaper's CIA coverage are left in the dark. The Post's new owner, Jeff Bezos, is it Bezos or Bezos? I don't know. He is the founder and CEO of Amazon, which recently landed a $600 million contract with the CIA, but the Post articles about the CIA are not disclosing that the newspaper's sole owner is the main owner of the CIA business partner, Amazon.